Hello, and this is another broadcast in the History of Yoga project, which was initiated by Brighton Yoga Foundation to try to map the history and interesting stories about how yoga developed in Brighton and how Brighton shaped yoga and yoga shaped Brighton. I've got one of my favourite yoga people in Brighton with me today, Savanti, who some of you will know from Unity in Brighton and now Unity in Lewes. And I'm hoping that she can shed some additional light on the history of yoga in Brighton. So welcome.
Thank you, Davey. Thanks for asking me to come in.
No, you're most welcome. So do you mind me asking, first of all, your name, Savanti, is that a yoga name that was given to you by a yoga guru or your yoga teacher training or something or what? Where did that actually come from?
Well, the story normally goes that, it was a name I took when I was in India.
Yeah.
So I used to go out to India every year, stay there for 3-4 months doing teaching and practice. And I really felt like I wanted to take a name that symbolised my journey and my passion and my, you know, my direction, I suppose, my passion in life, which was about meditation and yoga. And so I decided to take a name. And at the time, I was going a lot to the Osho ashram, actually.
Okay.
So that's where I decided to take a new name. So it was given to me, and it was quite a surprise. At the beginning, I wasn't sure I could connect with it. And then I was only going to use it with a small circle of people. And then suddenly it grew. And everyone now calls me Savanti. So my birth name is Joanne, which I still love. But most people call me Savanti.
And does Savanti actually have a specific meaning as well as it being
a name? It does, yeah. So it's golden flower.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite nice.
I wish I'd been called golden flower. I'm jealous now. Good. And so you got into yoga quite young, I think.
Yeah, really young. I think I was... Dance was my main passion, I guess, when I was growing up. And I always found myself doing a practice that wasn't exactly dance, but now I look back, I think, yeah, I was, you know, I was meditating, I was moving, it was organic, natural movement, really, meditative movement. But I didn't quite know what I was doing, it was just my own thing. And then I remember, I think I was probably doing my A-levels, and I came down to Brighton. I was living in Kent at the time, and I found my first ever yoga book in the lanes.
Mm.
So there was an old bookshop there, and I've still got it on my shelf. And I think it's just called The Book of Yoga. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I just immersed myself in this book. And it's like, I recognise this. I know this. I've been practising this. And now it all makes sense. And there's a structure. There's a form. And I love the philosophy. It really spoke to me. It brought all my passions into one place, movement, meditation, you know, the big questions about who we are, why we're here, mm-hmm. the legacy we want to leave behind, the way we treat our planet and each other. I just loved this whole way of life. So that was my kind of first entry into yoga, I suppose. And then at dance school, because I went to Laban, so I did a degree in dance, when I was there, I also came across yoga in a significant way because I had a couple of back injuries. So I came into it from a physical standpoint as well. And the yoga was incredible. We did yoga and Feldenkrais and Pilates and Alexander technique and all these amazing practices. And so, I really got the benefit of the physical aspect of yoga there as well. So in my final year of my degree, because this is the kind of person I am, I decided to do my yoga teacher training as well. So I wanted to do it all. And my training was 3 years in total. So
was it with a particular school? Or?
Yeah, well, it was a bit more, I guess, a very old kind of traditional way of learning, which was as a disciple in a way. So my teacher, which was Sajidanand, was his name, and he did travel... He took me and other people that were training but overlapping at different times. So it was more of a one-to-one, to be honest, sometimes in groups, around Europe and India. So I used to go all over the place. I used to go to see him in Spain, go to India, and then a bit less exotic to his home in Epsom. and so it was amazing. We used to meet, you know, every month, but sometimes we'd all be together for 3 months or 4 months. It was an incredible training.
Wow.
Yeah, it was lovely because I felt like he was a real mentor, and he was there. I could ask questions over all those years. It never felt rushed. It felt like it was at my own pace. Yeah.
So is that part of the Shivananda tradition, Satyananda, or
it actually integral yoga. Oh,
right.
So it came from that path. So initially would have been Shivananda through integral. And of course, what I teach now is very different to that, but that was my roots.
Mm.
Yeah.
And did you move into teaching straight away, or did you?
Yeah, it didn't take me long. So I think we're going back now to 97. '97, I think, when I finished. Yeah, I dived in, really. I was living in London, so I taught all over London. Now I think, gosh, how did I do it? I used to teach maybe 10 classes, 12 classes a week, but in all corners of London. So
yeah.
I spent a lot of time on the tube.
Yeah, no, my partner has the same recollection of
yeah.
4 classes a day in different parts of London.
Exactly,
yeah.
And all different places. And some of them were gyms and fitness centres, and some were more kind of meditation centres. It was amazing, I loved it. And I used to work at the Sanctuary in Covent Garden because I was I'm a massage
lovely,
therapist
yes.
as well. So I taught yoga there, I taught ballet there. Yeah, it was amazing. I really enjoyed that time of my life, teaching all over the place and different ages, different backgrounds, different types of yoga.
Mm.
Yeah, I embraced it all. I really threw myself into it.
So you never had a normal job?
No, never. No, I don't think I did, to be honest with you. I always had this vision of all my passions, bringing them together. So I always wanted to make a studio, and I always wanted to create a centre, because, you know, it was bringing together dance and yoga, meditation, Reiki and bodywork, various types of massage. And I created the life that I really wanted to live. So it was amazing. I felt like I was living a dream, to be honest.
And still are.
And still am. Well, I used to go to India a lot, as I say, but also Thailand. So I worked for, I don't know, 20, 25 years for Skiros. And that's a holistic holiday company.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I still do. I still go back there when I can. I'm very busy these days. But I'd go out there and teach yoga, partner yoga, dance, again, massage, Reiki, all these things. So I would spend these dreary months of January and February out in Thailand.
That's awful.
I know.
It was
really tough, and I don't know how I got through. But also in the summer, then I'd be in Greece. It was amazing.
Mm.
Yeah.
And why Brighton?
Oh,
because you were teaching in London, you were commuting around London.
Yeah.
Why suddenly
Brighton? Well, funnily enough, so I originally actually came down to Brighton Uni, and I'd started doing a degree in visual and performing arts, and I loved it so much. But I guess dance was really more my passion rather than fine art and so on. So I just felt like I wanted to do a bit more dance than was in that programme. So I decided to leave that degree halfway through, and that's why I went up to Laban. In London, in New Cross at the time, but I'd already fallen in love with Brighton. You know, so by being down here at the uni, it just felt like the place for me, my home. I loved it so much. So I knew I'd come back. So when I finished my degree in London, I made my way back, and I lived in Hove. And that's where my daughter was born, and then, of course, on Lewis Road. So I was there for a long time.
And yes, the studio in Lewis Road, which I remember well from when I did one of my courses with you.
Yeah.
When did that open?
So it opened in 2012, early 2012.
Right. So you were teaching in between. So
yeah.
You came back to Brighton when, about 2000 and...
Ooh. Oh, gosh, I'm rubbish at dates, to be honest.
Was it long before you opened Unity?
No, it was a long time because I was living in Hove and I was teaching at Yoga Haven.
Right.
I was teaching there. I was teaching at various different studios down here. And I used to teach in Lewis as well. I used to kind of hire rooms and teach all over.
Hmm.
So I don't know, maybe 8 years before or something.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the Unity studio, you set that up in 2012, you said, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So why a studio? Was that something you said earlier? I think you'd always wanted. So it gives you extra control, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, there was a practical part of And I'm sure, you know, if there's any other yoga teachers listening, they can relate with always carrying, you know, yoga mats and blocks and pillows and blankets. And, you know, I think I was a little tired of that. So I kind of wanted my own place. But another passion I have is decorating, design. I love design. And I love making homely spaces for people to practice in. And, you know,
are you available for hire?
Yes, I really am. Yeah, I love that, actually. Definitely more than the admin, I must say. I really enjoy it. And I feel like I like practicing in a place that's homely and comfortable and warm, rather than sometimes I find some studios and centres quite austere. I know some people will love that, but personally I like it feeling a bit softer and more comforting and nurturing. So I like... Yeah, choosing fabrics and colours and, yeah, beautiful plants everywhere and having nature around. So Lewis Road was a perfect opportunity for that because it had actually quite a nice sort of terrace garden out the back.
So it was downstairs, wasn't it, and the garden out the back?
Yeah.
So how many people did you get there to teach? Did you?
Yeah.
Were you flooded with requests to come and teach there? Because by that time yoga had become quite big.
Well, to be honest, I think when I first started I set it up really for my teacher training that I was running at that point then, because I started running that in 2002. So I wanted somewhere for the home of teacher training. And to run a few classes and a few friends, because I knew lots of yoga teachers, obviously, in Brighton. So I thought it would be just a scattering, you know, 3, 4, 5 of us. But very quickly, it got incredibly busy. In fact, I did find an old flyer the other day in my office, and it was packed. I forgot how busy we were.
Yeah.
And I had the most incredible team. I had lovely Anna Brooke, who was the studio manager, and Rosie Davies, who was the school manager. And it was just the three of us, and it was amazing. It was so incredible. We had a brilliant time together, and it was busy and exciting because there weren't many studios in Brighton at the time.
No. We talked about that just before we interviewed.
Yeah.
I think there were only about 4 or 5 probably others.
Yeah.
Brighton Natural Health Centre, Buddhist Centre, Yoga Haven.
Yeah. Gary Carter's.
Natural Bodies. Yeah. I think that would have been it.
I think Studio I
was slightly later.
Yeah, I think that had opened towards the end of me being on Lewis Road. Yeah, there weren't many of us around at the time. And so it was really busy. And not just with yoga. You know, we had lots of kirtans, meditation groups, lots of massage groups, all kinds of things going on there. It was wonderful. It was really exciting at that time.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because that's true now of Unity and Lewis, which we will come on to. But I think you did always have a broader range of things at your studio than most other yoga studios. Obviously the Buddhist Centre, by its nature, was was broader.
Yeah.
But some of the other yoga studios were quite narrowly focused just on yoga classes and the occasional Pilates.
That's true. I think probably coming from all my passions, I suppose, you know, I really respect and love so many disciplines of that whole way of life that branches out from embodiment, you know, somatic therapy, whether that might be more martial arts based or various moving meditations and bringing in art. You know, there was also a lot of writing happening. There were all kinds of related passions going on.
Teachers, excuse me, at the time.
It's going to be really hard for me to remember.
I remember Anna and Rosie. In fact, still see Rosie occasionally around the corner.
Oh,
she lives quite near
lovely.
To me.
Yeah. I mean, it's terrible lately, my memory going back that far. I think I'm so busy running the centre. But it was very eclectic. We had all different styles.
Yeah, we
really did. And we went from quite early in the morning till late at night. And I lived upstairs.
7 days a week?
7 days a week, yeah. And I lived upstairs, so I felt really involved in everything, which was fantastic. You know, sometimes it was there were really loud events going on downstairs, and I had my daughter there, so I decided in the end to move to Lewis and give her a bit of space. But it was exciting. There were a lot of great stuff happening. Yeah,
a number of other people I've spoken to who run studios. They've You know, I thought about it at one stage, but a number of them said to me, I remember, I think it was Nikki in Yoga Haven said to me, I spend more time fixing the boiler than I do practicing yoga.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
And it sort of put me off. I mean, was that is that your experience? Because there is so many practicalities. People don't think about it. You just show up at a studio. You don't realise that all those things behind the scenes have to work. Isn't that quite a substantial part of energy and time?
It really is. It really is. It's massive. You know, the admin, the organisation, you know, constantly looking at spreadsheets, you know, making sure financially it's viable, which, you know, is tough because you want to try and make it as affordable as possible. Yeah, it's hard work, really hard work. And yeah, somehow I went on to create another one. And so it hadn't put me off. I think knowing that so many people get something so wonderful out of a space just made me keep going. I think communities really need spaces where people can just be themselves and create wonderful things happening. You know, the teachers that came in created magic in there. You know, there were so many happy people leaving the studio, you know, at the end of their session and going out into brighter. Then you get that domino effect of that lovely energy going out into the city. So I felt very blessed, actually, to be somewhere where these people were able to share what makes the world a better place.
Yeah, I think when more recently Brighton Natural Health Centre was having to close, it just struck me that these sorts of centres are so important, and you don't realise how important they are till they've gone, because they are exactly as you said. I mean, not just yoga studios or wellness studios, but actually other community centres and places like that. Mm-hmm. Places that they're like anchor organisations in a community that hold it together.
Yeah.
And losing them is a real problem, I think. It's people really miss them, but they don't realise how much they value them until they've gone.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because still now, I mean, we had to close it mainly because of COVID. In 2022, I think it was, or late 2021. But now people come up to me and say, oh, I met you, you know, it was like over 10 years ago at the studio. Oh, I really, really miss it. You know, lots of people still talk about it, which is really special, really lovely. And I hadn't realised also that it was so loved in that way, you know. And now it's lovely. It's like a little legacy, and the energy of it is still there, and other things came out of it. New seeds were sown. And now, of course, there's so many studios in Brighton. It's wonderful. It's such a melting pot of yoga. I miss it. I miss being in Brighton in many ways.
Yeah. I mean, you must have taught, you must have trained lots and lots. I mean, it must be hundreds of people. But
I think it is. You know, I've kind of lost count. So teaching since 2002, every year, normally 10, 12 people on the diploma. So, yeah, it's a lot. There were a couple of years off here and there. But yeah, on the whole, a lot of people came through, and some of them still teach, like at the centre in Lewis, and a lot of us collaborate still together. Yeah, it becomes a family, a tribe, and we're all, you know, sharing and teaching together, and everyone goes off into their own speciality of teaching as well. And I love that. That's what I'm passionate about with the teacher training, is I would never want to churn out people that are all teaching the same. I get really excited about what the unique passions that people bring with them to the teacher training. And then it's, again, a melting pot of all these different ideas, because we change. And I know the way I've taught has massively changed over the years. And so we can't be fixed, definitely not in a teacher training. It should be a place of creativity and exploration and inspiration. And so I like giving people, you know, space to really find what's right for them. And everyone comes from their own journey and their own experiences. And then we all share that and look at what works for different members of the community, so that we can be really diverse and welcome everybody and whatever need they have.
And you used to run, I know because I came on one, sort of post-grad yoga teacher training courses, which I always thought was a lovely idea, because actually most of us did our yoga teacher training maybe a long time ago, and actually, although we try to pick up new stuff all the time, actually having it being forced to really seriously think about it again in a structured way, I always thought was a really good idea. Did you do that for many years, or was that just...
Well, I'm doing another one next year. I've had a break in between because of setting up the centre and COVID and all these things. But yeah, I'm definitely doing it again next year. And I, yeah, it was great having you on it as well. It was amazing. It was
we had a good
fantastic
team. I mean, thinking there were, it was a small group, and and Danny has now gone on to run Brighton Yoga Festival. But Bev has now gone on to be a main teacher at ECHA. ECHA. Sure, how it's pronounced, but the which has replaced Yoga Haven. So I mean, and I'm involved in the foundation and all the rest of it. So it was, it was an interesting group of people.
It really was, and then all the teachers that came to us as well, Peter Blackaby and Gary Carter. You know, that we had so many wonderful teachers coming in, and I think the beauty of it was that we were all a closed group. And then these wonderful, exceptional visiting teachers would come to us. And so we could just go deeper and deeper and deeper as a group. Because I think as a yoga teacher, you know, we obviously still need to keep diving deep ourselves and learning and getting inspired and excited by new ways of sharing. And you can be a bit out there on your own sometimes. You know, and I think that's why so many of us love living around Brighton, because again, it's a community of teachers, which is wonderful. And when you do something like a postgrad, you have people to bounce ideas off of and share those difficult moments, like the admin. You know, and of course we hold we're space holders for often, you know, trauma as well, you know, trauma release, especially when many of us are doing more kind of yoga therapy and working with one to ones, and we need to be able to share that with people and get support as well. So yeah, I loved running it. I felt very honoured to have all these wonderful teachers come and share their passions, and definitely it will start again next year.
And have you ever done mentoring of teachers as such, or formally or informally? I'm sure you have informally, but have you ever done it in a more formal way as well?
It's funny you ask, because I have been doing it informally, and now I'm actually thinking, where do I go now, you know, personally, not the centre or anything. But for me personally, I feel like I've been running retreats, you know, since 1998. So I'd like to start kind of sharing with people, you know, how do you run retreats for different groups, and mentoring on a one-to-one with people so that they can again work into some of those difficult areas and keep progressing their own practice as well. And then also I'm thinking of setting up myself as a mentor in how to set up centres and studios, because obviously I've, you know, done a couple of those now, so I've got a bit of an insight. So yes, I am thinking of going down that path more.
I think you'd be a brilliant mentor.
Thank you.
I mean more generally, not just even on, I mean, the topics that you just mentioned are sort of obvious ones, but I just think in general, you know, the idea of teachers can go to someone who's very experienced and who they can talk to and get some ideas from and all the rest. I think it's sort of thing that you'd be very well suited to.
I enjoy it. Thanks, Davey. I think, you know, on a one-to-one, that's something I get most passionate about. I love getting to know people on a really deep level and understanding, you know, how we can really dig deep and resource ourselves as well as possible in a world that's becoming, it's difficult at the moment for so many of us. And I think we all need support. And especially yoga teachers, again, like I say, space holders, people that are holding a lot of energy. And there can be a lot of projections towards us as yoga teachers. That's quite hard to hold. And, you know, we're real, we're human, we have struggles and difficulties just like everybody else. And that, it's hard, you know, being a teacher, running a centre, I think people can often imagine that, you know, you've got some perfect formula. Of course you haven't, you're just trying your best and doing what works for you and sharing that with others. We're all different. But I like finding what makes each of us tick and constantly remembering to, you know, look after ourselves, self-care.
Yeah, the yoga community isn't all love and light either.
No, it really isn't. And that's what I'm really passionate about, is looking at us as, you know, fully faceted human beings. All these emotions that are present in all of us, all the struggles, all the difficulties, all the possibilities, you know, and to be aware of that and kind and investigate it and be with it. And then bring in some nurture and some self-care. I think it's the awareness. It's really just giving ourselves a bit of space and be kind to ourselves. That all that we juggle, everything that we're all doing, we're all multitaskers these days. And you know, I'm a single parent, and sometimes I really don't know how I do it all. But it's the passion. It's the passion of yoga that gets me through. It really is.
So we've avoided talking about Lewis Unity Centre up until now, but I feel it's time. So COVID, you didn't really get into online teaching particularly, did you?
We did for a short time, yes. So we opened in September 2019.
Yeah.
And I kept the Brighton studio going for a couple of years. And then I soon realised, actually, I'm not superhuman. I can't run these two places, especially with all the restrictions of COVID.
Yeah.
So I let that go, and then I put all my energy into the Unity Centre, which is a CIC, a not-for-profit, for the community over profit. And, yeah, we were obviously forced to close almost as soon as we opened.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember coming to the opening, and it was literally a few months later.
It was. Oh, well, I look back at those photos. Incredibly bad timing, wasn't it? Yeah, I mean, we were packed. The day we opened, we had people queuing all the way down the street. I had no idea people would be that interested. It was quite overwhelming and so exciting, but that was something. I had no idea Lewis so wanted something like this. It's amazing. And so that night we had incredible bands, we were full, you know. And then of course that was September 2019, and then what was it, January, yeah, February, we had to close. And I still remember it now. We had Soul Soup, who were doing the food, and I remember talking to Maya and saying, we've got to close. And we both couldn't quite take that in. And of course, yeah, the doors were shut. But the amazing thing was that we could go online. We did do a fair bit of that, maybe for about a year. But actually, the silver lining was that because we're a CIC, we could actually keep the doors open for our most vulnerable groups. So we could run supportive sessions, mainly for one-to-ones, and certain vulnerable groups that could come in and receive the help that they so desperately needed. So actually we relieved, I think, a lot of isolation at that time for people that really needed it. So ironically, I think it was quite, you know, serendipity that we could really do what we were most passionate about, which was working with those that really needed it. It's always been about diversity and inclusion and making sure that we can reach everybody.
It was pretty amazing that you even got the place in the first place, isn't it? Because wasn't it something like you had to bid, and weren't there over 20 other people bidding for to get the building? Because it was a building that had been, I don't know what, it had been a printing thing, I think, for many years, and then it was a Turkish baths for a few years or something, and then and then it was sort of semi-derelict, and the community council wanted to get it up and running again, and loads of people bid, and you won it.
I won it. I don't know. I mean, it's amazing, really. I think I'd been looking for a venue for a long time, because my venue in Brighton was amazing, but it did have quite steep stairs.
Yes.
So it did rule out quite a few people being able to access it, and that never felt comfortable. And
With Brighton Natural Health Centre. That was one of the reasons why they shut, because the disability changes they would have had to have made were just impossibly expensive.
Well, this is it. It's these old buildings in Brighton. It's hard. And so I guess I was looking for something that had accessibility. And my father had had a stroke, and I was his carer, and he was my biggest inspiration always. And I really wanted to make a place that for people like him, they could come in. Because I never wanted it to be some kind of cool, cliquey studio, you know, where you've got to have the right leggings and the right mat. I wanted it always to be for everybody, regardless of age and background and ability. So, I was on the lookout for places, and I really wanted to do it in Lewis. I'd moved to Lewis by then. And so when this place came up, it seemed like a bit of a dream come true. And so I started going for it, but I was up against, I think there were 24 other bidders, and many of those were big corporate companies, you know, that wanted to take this over and put in restaurants and all kinds of things. But actually the council were amazing, Lewis District Council, and they really wanted a place for the community. And I think that's why they liked the project, because it was quite eclectic, because I had put in the bid saying, you know, it's music therapy, art therapy. This isn't just yoga. Mm. This is for the arts as well. And I wanted to create, obviously, we've got 3 massage rooms there now, a flotation pool, an infrared sauna, a vegan cafe. And I wanted 2 studios so that there were always different things going on. And I wanted there to be an accessible bathroom and a changing table and a hoist. And so we could really go into proper yoga therapy. And it just, it was perfect. So I put all my energy into it. Which is a lot of energy. Well, I'm a triple Aries, so that's why. And amazingly, we were offered the Turkish baths. So you're right, it was originally the Turkish baths, and then it did become Clothworks. And the print works, yes. Various things. And it had been empty, actually, for a long time.
Right.
And there were pop-up art studios in there and so on. And the community really wanted it to be used and brought back to life. So when I won the bid, that's when the real work started. And I suddenly thought, well, hang on, where am I going to get £100,000 worth from to do this place up? You know, but I think when you put your passion out there and your vision, it comes together. And so somehow I refurbished the whole place. The council did the exterior, the roof and the windows and all of that. And then I did everything inside, the electrics, the plumbing, the heating, the flooring, completely refurbished it and opened this, beautiful centre.
And didn't you go to Turkey to get some of the internal decorations?
Yeah.
To keep it in...
Yeah, as in a nod sort of to its past use. I really wanted to keep that alive, and that's why I wanted to put in the float pool and the sauna. It was too complex to put in a section of Turkish baths again. I did think about it, but it was really expensive, and I just thought, well, people really want this, actually. An infrared sauna is incredible, amazing, in so many ways, not just because of the heat, but, you know, for all kinds of injuries in the joints and opening up connective tissue and so on. So I wanted to put that in, and the float pool, which is, again, for similar reasons, takes you into such a deep relaxation and is so wonderful for ailments and injuries. And so that those water-based therapies, I wanted them to be in there for sure. And so I also decorated it, in a Turkish theme. So that sort of studio
in
Brighton
was... Coming back to your design skills and your passion for decoration and design.
But it was always that kind of, Eastern Islamic kind of beautiful architecture and design. I love that. And then, bringing in all those lanterns. So I went to Istanbul and had a great shopping trip and brought back all these beautiful pieces. I mean, you know, you can't go in a kilim shop and not come out with a kilim. You know, I came back with so many beautiful pieces. And then the rest was actually from a lot of charity shops and, lovely second-hand places around Brighton.
It is the most beautiful yoga studio, I think, around in this area, I think, isn't it? I mean, I'm not saying that to flatter. I just think it's true, you know.
I mean, I think it's lovely and people really enjoy it. They say they feel very calm as soon as they walk in, I think, because of the decor. And we always, it's a very sensory experience. So we like burning lovely essential oils and the team are incredible. I honestly just feel blessed every day. The managers are wonderful, all the receptionists, all the teachers, the therapists, everyone that's involved is absolutely incredible. So I think when you walk in, you feel a warm welcome. And so it's that. And, I think the decor really massively helps.
And how's it going?
Well, it's been a journey since COVID, but it's going really, really well. So we're very, very busy at the moment. In fact, we are extending a bit into Quakers next door for a few classes, just where we're trying to expand the timetable a bit more to make sure that we're really reaching what everybody wants. Because we're a CIC, we offer, free funded classes for different members of the community. So it might be for older people that have had a stroke, for example, obviously inspired by my dad, and also people that have dementia and other forms of memory loss and brain damage, and also working with young people. So I'm very passionate about working with people who are neurodivergent anyway, but especially young people who have so much pressure on their shoulders and they're suffering from, you know, depression and anxiety and stress. We also work with women who have been through, women and men actually, who have been through domestic and sexual violence. Mm. We've worked a lot with refugees and with cared for children. There's a whole spectrum. When we were going through COVID, we also worked a lot with frontline workers as well, a lot with the NHS and so on. So we give free flotation therapy or free saunas or free yoga, free massage. And so we apply for various funding from trusts and charities and different organisations. However, it's getting hard.
Tell me
it's getting
it.
Really, really tough. So we did, it was hard to renew a lot of that funding in the summer. Yeah. So we've been doing our own funding. Today is actually the last day when we're recording this for the crowd fund. So far we've raised, I think it's almost £8,500, which is absolutely incredible. I'm over the moon. We're all so happy and so grateful to everybody that's put in whatever they were able to. It's such a blessing. So that money will be going into these projects to keep them going. And then we're always applying for more funding and always welcoming, you know, corporate collaboration. And we've got lots of sponsors and donations coming in. And it really helps for us to make sure that these services are free or subsidised, so that people really can come even if they can't afford it.
That's extremely difficult to do, though, and keep the boiler going.
Yes. I mean, well, it goes really back to difficult what you were saying earlier. You know, it's like we've still got to keep the maintenance going, make sure everybody's paid and everything's covered in the building. You know, it's a massive operation. Mm. It really is. I must say I've had a few sleepless nights. Really, it's tough. It's really tough, especially now. I think since COVID, it's wonderful. Lots of people have set up community interest companies. I think it became apparent to everyone how much support we need to give our more vulnerable neighbours and friends around us. So it's wonderful. I think out of that insight, lots of CICs were created. Mm. However, obviously, there's not more money in the pot. So, of course, we're all now competing. There's less money in the pot, yeah. So it's tough. It's really tough.
And the cost of living crisis as well.
Well, this is it. And the energy, the fuel bills have just gone through the roof. I mean, we have an air source heat pump that helps a little bit, but still we want to keep it obviously warm and cosy. You know, we have to keep that heating on all day, constantly. And because it's an air source heat pump, you know, you keep it running continuously and the float pool obviously is on all the time. These things are not cheap to run, but we also try and keep it like a sliding scale wherever we possibly can. And there are concessions, so if people are on low wage, they can apply and they can get a percentage off of everything that we do. Mm. So we have memberships and class packs, drop-in classes, even a spa membership. People can come for a day package or a half-day package, and it's really lovely just to come to Lewis if you don't live in Lewis and just enjoy a day there and have a massage and a float and a sauna and go to a class. And you can do that on your own, or you can do it with a friend or a partner, or maybe with your son or daughter perhaps. Mm. And I think it's a nice experience for people. And we offer a lot of workshops. Loads of Brighton teachers come out actually. Mm. And in fact, part of our fundraising, which blew me away, was so many facilitators offered their time for free, including you, David, and came out and offered these amazing workshops, and then all the money raised has gone into the crowd fund. So yeah, it's been an amazing collective effort. So I feel very blessed to be part of this wonderful family of yogis.
And you're still having the kirtans, I think, as well, because you used to have them. It's been on my to-do list for ages to come to one of them. But
It's Narayani.
Once a month, isn't it?
It's amazing. Narayani and Matt are just incredible, amazing.
And they're back from, they were in Spain for a few years.
Yeah, they're back living here now. And it's just a wonderful, very popular event. We're always sold out. I think, I don't want to get this wrong, but I think it's the first Friday of the month. It's packed. It's a wonderful experience. People love the kirtan. Mm. Very popular. And we've had some gigs. We had Martha Tilston play.
Yes.
That was brilliant. We would love more bands, actually. We would really love a lot more music, all kinds of pop-up events we could do there. And as I say, you know, we have writing groups, we have yoga therapy. There's a laughter yoga on this Sunday, actually. There's all kinds of great things. Yeah, wonderful things.
And I mean, one of the things that strikes me about Lewis, Lewis is quite similar to Brighton in one level in terms of the sort of ethos of the place being alternatively and progressive generally and all that, is that there are a lot of other sorts of organisations and outfit. I mean, the depot has made a huge change to Lewis. It seems to me just a massive impact. And then there's yourselves, there's, I mentioned to you before, there's the Con Club up the road, which is the old Conservative Club.
Right.
You know, which is now called the Con, and which does music things. And there's other, and there must be other things like that.
Yes.
I just think sort of networking amongst those organisations, because actually they should, I know that the depot's on a different scale, but you know, even so, they should all be mutually supporting each other, because they're all really providing different aspects of the same sort of community focus.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, so Robert Senior, who set up the depot, he was absolutely wonderful. He was a bit of a mentor to me, actually, really supportive when I was opening the centre.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Oh, that's really good.
He was incredible. And the depot is such a big success. It's a brilliant, amazing enterprise. And then also, of course, there was Zoo Studios that was moved around, of course, on the industrial estate and then in the bus station upstairs. And that was incredible. And the community, of course, is still very much there. So, yeah, we used to think, actually, along that whole stretch of road, because we've also got... We've got the church next door as well, and there's Quakers. There's actually some wonderful things happening along there. And I've also thought perhaps we could all come together and do a collaboration. I think that'd be wonderful. And also just across to Brighton, because obviously we're still part of the Brighton Yoga Festival and sponsor it each year. And I'd love to get involved more, you know, with Brighton. We're just up the road. It's not that far.
Yeah.
But I think that's it. It comes from collaboration, people with similar values and wanting to come together with the same vision and see what we can do, because, you know, there's more power in numbers.
Yeah. Talking of the festival, funny enough, I've been meaning to ask you for ages. Someone told me, I don't think it was you, someone told me that well before we set up the Brighton Yoga Festival, you'd had the idea to do it as well, and that you'd actually taken some initial steps to organise one, but for whatever reason it hadn't worked out. Is this one of those stories that's untrue, or is this actually, is there some truth to it?
I think there is an element of truth in it, actually. I think I used to be recognised by the IYN, the Independent Yoga Network, and so we used to do festivals regularly, you know, and bring all different yoga teachers together. That used to really inspire me in many ways. So I kind of thought about that, and Buddhafield, where I teach, you know, just that coming together of people and throwing that whole idea of competition out the window. You know, it's like we might all teach differently. Let's come together and really celebrate our differences. This is amazing. And we've all got the same passion, you know. So I did want to create something like that. And I was really passionate about making sure it's for families as well and for children. And so I think when you'd got the festival running, that's why I got involved in working with the children right at the beginning, because that was my particular passion, I think, of like young people, helping them grow up with yoga. You know, I was lucky I found it in my teens, but you know, not many people do, and I did have that idea of let's create something that's for everyone of all ages. But so yeah, I'm pleased you did it.
How far did you get with any preparations?
I think it was a lovely idea that yeah, would have just taken me a lot longer to pull together. Yeah. I was spinning too many plates. Yeah. But I think the retreats that I ran, I tried to amplify those and make those bigger, and I think that's where it was time for you to lead on that, which was amazing, Davey, what you created.
It fell into our lap, really.
It was really incredible.
Absolutely incredible. Stroke of luck, really. We pulled it off at the time we did. But,
I'd say it's more than luck.
There's a lot of work as well. Yeah. But it was interesting anyway. One of the other things I was going to ask you about is about this sort of outreach work that you do, because... I mean, what's different about Unity, I think, from some of the other yoga studios is some of the other yoga studios, they basically do yoga and it's a commercial thing and they charge commercial rates. and they sort of dip into doing a little bit of community stuff on the side. Yeah. But yours is completely community focused and everything. And in a way, I think it's easier for those other studios to survive financially, yes, than it is for you.
Yes.
you have the moral high ground, but they have the money in the bank.
Yeah.
You know, and I know. And I just wonder how, you know, it's an interesting landscape of different varieties of studios and different approaches and everything, but you're quite different. And now that Brighton Natural Health Centre doesn't have a physical location,
mm-hmm,
you're probably about balance is quite mm-hmm good in that direction,
yeah,
but you're probably the foremost one to have quite that community orientation.
Yes, I think we probably are, and I reflect on this a lot. You know, I think I could have made this easier. This could have been a lot easier, but it would never have fulfilled the purpose. Mm. At the end of the day, as long as we need to make sure we can survive and keep going, because so many people see it as a lifeline, the centre. They really do. And so we just want to create this wonderful place that has longevity in it, and we can keep going, and we can make sure that we are there and we're stable, we're a good anchor for people. So we just do everything we can with all the fundraising. We have recently had to put some of our prices up, of course, as you say, with the cost of living crisis, but we're trying to keep it as affordable as we possibly can. You know,
we're still quite modest, I think, your prices, even with the new increase. I'm not interfering, but I think they're still quite modest. You know?
Yeah, well, that's important to us. It really is important to us. And even if people look at the website and think, oh, I can't do that, then to get in contact with us, because there are programmes that run, sometimes people don't realise, but there are programmes that run that we can support them to enter into, or give individual concessions to make sure that they can take part. We don't want to turn people away, and we have to survive. It's a balance between the two. And just coming back to the team, they are all so devoted. Honestly, I just couldn't ask for anything more. The team are incredible, and everyone's so passionate. And I think we've all got our personal stories. You know, we've all got someone in our life or had someone in our life that really needed those services. So we're kind of doing it for them. We're doing it for the people that didn't get that or could have had that. But, you know, it didn't happen in time. I mean, including my dad, really. He passed away in COVID.
I remember, yes.
Yeah, so he saw me setting it up.
Yeah.
And that was amazing.
I remember him being at the events. And
I'm sure that was really a big thing for him. That's it. And so he saw it launch. And so he's always in my mind. And I had a cousin who unfortunately had quite a difficult ending to his life, and I'm doing this for him too as well. And I know so many stories, so many sad and tragic stories of mental health, physical difficulty, isolation, loneliness. And I'm a very sensitive person. I'm a very emotional person, I suppose. I really feel all of that, and I think we all are at the centre. We really recognise it, and that's why we just carry on, even though it's not easy. We really believe in it. So, you know, I guess anyone that comes to a class there, they're supporting that practice, that programme, because it's a pay it forward structure. So then, you know, as we are able to get more funds in, we're able to put more programmes on, and then people can come in and receive some of those services for free. So it's just helping each other. Really helping each other. There's we were talking about this morning at the centre. I think in some parts of the world, you know, there's these cafes where you go in and you buy three coffees, and two of them are for you and your friend, and one is you're leaving one hanging, you know. Mm-hmm. So then somebody can come in and say, have you got any hanging coffees there, any free coffees? And I guess that's kind of the structure that we have, is it's that pay it forward. If you can pay more, then wonderful, because then that will support other people. And we all go through different times of our life where we might be more affluent or less so. You know, things change all the time, so we support each other.
Mm. And you did have you mentioned the soup.
Soul soup.
Soul soup. Yeah. I've forgotten, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you haven't really got enough space for a big cafe as such, have you? Yeah, I mean, you haven't thought about taking over the building next door to provide the cafe.
Well, we've been weighing up what to do, because when I first opened the centre, we did have a proper kitchen. It's now our office and kind of storage space. But when COVID happened, we actually took the kitchen out. And so now I would like to reopen the cafe properly. We sell drinks and refreshments, and we do pop-up lunches and dinners. But I would actually really welcome someone coming in to sell their food on site. But it's not huge, but it's a lovely lounge space. It is a really lovely area. It wouldn't be a huge space, but in summer we have little tables outside on the grass. But who knows, maybe it will expand. I'm not sure. We're just, you know, getting through these days, and then we'll see where we get with it.
And what are your thoughts more generally about yoga, and where's yoga sort of going? Because I spend a lot of time thinking about it. And we sort of came through that period where yoga went through a massive expansion and was a very trendy thing to do, wasn't it? I mean, a lot of people got into it. I remember someone coming to my class and saying, "I want to look like Madonna." I said, "Come in.
See what I can do."
Yeah, I'll do my best. But now it's sort of like more settled. And in fact, you know, my estimate is that I reckon about half of the yoga teachers in Brighton are not teaching at all.
Oh, really?
And a considerable portion of the rest of them now are part-time. Whereas previously, I think 15 years ago, there were quite a lot of full-time yoga teachers in Brighton. Not that many full-time yoga teachers now. Nowhere near as many, I don't think. Even though the number of yoga teachers is still in the many hundreds, it's 600-700 teachers or something in Brighton. And the studios, I think I mentioned to you recently that the studios in London now, their prices, £24 for a one-hour drop-in class.
Incredible, yes.
You know, but they're doing that to survive because they can't. And people went through a phase of doing the teacher training to make money, because that made money and the studios didn't. But now all they've done is they've flooded the market with loads of yoga teachers all looking for work.
Yeah.
It feels like it's sort of a bit of a point of, where's it all going to go? Because I don't think what's happened over the last 20 years is sustainable at all.
It's very interesting to reflect on, isn't it? I think, like, my teacher training is just under a year. And personally, I feel, this is just my own personal opinion, but I feel that's the absolute minimum. Yeah, and that's the foundation for me.
Me too. Yeah.
And then the postgrad, I feel, is essential, whether it's, you know, with anyone, any kind of postgraduate training to keep furthering our skills. And I think there's a lot of month courses out there, and of course they're very appealing. They're somewhere sunny and hot and lovely, but the reality is you're there with hundreds of people. You never really get to teach. You don't get your practice. You don't really teach in real life. You're teaching your fellow students, who are all very capable and able. But when you get back here and you're teaching the real world, how do you cope? How do you cope with suddenly seeing halfway through, actually, there's someone that's pregnant in a room that hasn't told you, you know, because you're not equipped for that. So I think there are a lot of unsafe teachers around as well. And it's not to make a negative of that, but I think it has been flooded in that way. And so it's quite difficult for the public to know who to trust and who they feel safe with in many ways.
And so, for the NHS and for other people who have responsibilities in statutory terms for wellness, it's hard for them to know who they can trust.
It really is. It's very, very difficult. And also, yoga can always be taken of just a tiny fragment of what it is. We know it's a whole way of life, you know, the asana practice is a teeny part of that. But some teachers will only teach that. They won't bring in any philosophy, or obviously the core is a meditation, and this organic movement and awareness of embodiment and somatic healing. And so people will only get a very small, narrow experience of what yoga truly is. I still think at least that's on the stepping stone, and it will take them into other places, so it's all wonderful and worthwhile. But it is quite hard to know if you're landing in the right place or not. And I've had people, I'm sure you have as well, come to my class and say, "Oh, I've tried yoga in the past, really didn't like it, really not sure I'm going to be into this." And then they might just click with my style. Not everybody will love everybody's style. We'll have to find our teacher, of course. But I think, you know, if you're listening to this and you've tried it and it wasn't quite for you, just keep trying, keep finding different styles and different teachers, because you will find the one that fits with you. So maybe things are settling down a little bit. I've noticed things are slowing down. I think we spoke about this the other day with Jane, our lovely studio manager, that there seem to be a lot of people interested in yin yoga, restorative yoga, kind of slowing it down, which I think is even more needed in today's world. The pace is fast. So we really have to create a practice that goes deep. But it's harder. It's more challenging to sit with yourself and your emotions and your sensations in your body that are not easy to be with. It's a tough practice. And so I love both extremes, the yin and the yang. I love bringing them both together and exploring them both, because they're both there for different times of our life, different times of the day. So maybe there's an exploration into slower aspects of yoga and more mindfulness and meditation. And on the teacher training, I love really encouraging people to bring all that philosophy into their classes, because people are hungry for it. You know, we're all looking for inspiration and resources that are going to help us day to day. And I think
Very difficult to do it in, you know, I think it's quite easy to do it in a workshop. So like these workshops I'm going to be doing, I'm going to do a couple on things like that. But it's in like in a dynamic 45 minute or an hour class, it's hard to start talking about yamas and niyamas.
It is. You know, there might be little drops, might there? Little seeds that just, you know, it might go in and then people can reflect on it for the rest of the day. Yeah. Just a little, you know, something about ahimsa, the way we are thinking about ourselves and others. You know, just noticing, am I being self-critical? And, you know, and then just giving ourselves a bit of love. Just a little seed like that for the day may help somebody, you know, just give themselves a bit more time and appreciation, I suppose.
Mm. We've been talking for nearly an hour, believe it or not.
It's a long time.
the last thing I suppose I would want people to think about after listening to this one is to give you more help and support, because I mean that seriously, because I do think Unity is one of the absolute best studios around, and it'd be the worst thing possible if it wasn't there. So how can people help? I mean, I guess spreading the word, finding, like, you know, maybe there are people there who know musicians who might come in and do more gigs for you, that type of thing.
We would love
but
that.
How, I mean, other than the obvious sort of coming to a class or raising money, what other sort of innovative things can people offer that might help you to sustain the place?
Well, I mean, the crowdfund that's finishing today, that it will always be ongoing. We'll always be fundraising. Mm. So we're always looking for any facilitators that would be happy to donate their time to run a workshop where we can get, you know, carry on putting money into all these projects. We do have corporate relationships as well. So if people want to, you know, put some money into their corporate social responsibility, they can. We have lots of sponsors, and we go out into businesses as well. We take the yoga to them. We take chair massage to them. We may work in these beautiful country retreats and do away days for the staff, that kind of thing. So it can be at our centre or it can be at theirs or somewhere neutral. And yeah, as you say, hiring the venue for events, coming to classes, coming to workshops, any donations, and spreading the word, really. And remembering it's yoga and related disciplines. It's basically for the whole community. And just thinking in your life, is there anyone that could benefit from some of these services? Because, you know, often people say, oh, I didn't realise it was on. And we try and advertise, but there's only a finite amount of budget for marketing. And we work closely with the link workers, you know, the social prescribers from the GP surgeries. And we're working very closely with other charities like Survivors Network and also Mind, you know, really big charities. But still, it's hard to reach everyone. So I think it's just spreading the word so that more and more people can gain the benefit. We want the room to be full if there is a project there that's free for people. We want people to make the most of it.
So we should get some of the Brighton people to realise that Lewis exists.
It really exists. And it's nearly only 10 minutes on the train. it's amazing. And when I lived in Brighton, Hove and Brighton, and then I moved to Lewis, I just love Lewis. It's such a beautiful place. So to visit, you know, it's amazing. It's like a little away day, a little retreat.
Yeah.
So come out, have a nice day with us, or come and teach with us, come and share. We would love to grow the family.
Go to a class. Come to go watch a film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go to a gig. Support all the positive things in Lewis.
Yeah, it's a great place.
And appropriately, the sun has just come out and is streaming into the room. Oh. So how good is that? So, Samantha, thank you very much coming in, but more importantly, thank you for your contribution towards developing the history of yoga in Brighton. Oh,
thanks, Davey. And thanks for everything you are doing and networking and bringing everybody together.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Thank you.